If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to today's In Conversation With podcast. I'm Georgie Corrigal, the founder and editor of Sherlock's. And today I'm joined by Sherlock's homes and interiors editor and mother of two, Georgina Blasky. Also by Lalo's ambassador, Cameron Longtell, and by relationship therapist, Claire Faulkner. We're going to be chatting all about sex and specifically how to broach this often still taboo topic with your children. From the best age to start the conversation to explaining consent, we thought it would be helpful to tackle this quite difficult topic as a parent together. Welcome, ladies. Lovely to have you with us today.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Could it be useful just to go around and just explain what age our children are at? I'll start with me. So mine are 4, 9, and 10. So I'd say with my 10-year-old, this is territory that we're kind of getting into. So I am literally all ears and I'm going to be taking notes. So that's me. Georgina, your children are?
I've got a daughter who's 15 and a son who's about to turn 13.
Cameron, you've got a lot of boys in your life.
I do. I've got 4 boys, 17, 12, and 11-year-old twins.
Wow.
All boys.
Mother of 4 boys.
Yes.
You're very loved, I always think.
I am the queen of the castle.
Claire, hello.
I've got a 4-year-old daughter and a 6-year-old son. And then I've got 2 older teenage stepdaughters who are 15 and nearly 18.
Okay, so I guess the first question is, we've got lots of ages between us. What age should you start talking about sex to your children? It's really hard on that, isn't it? Cameron, I'm going to start with you.
So I've always been a person that's been very open and honest about being naked in the house, about educating my kids about correct anatomical body parts. We didn't really use any funny sort of names for our body parts. So I think it was always sort of an organic thing, and from potty training all the way up to now. But really, when I started talking about it, was about 10. I felt like 10 was the perfect age where they're still in their innocence and questioning it, but they're going into sort of a different phase of their life where you can actually sit down and they're not naive. They know where babies come from, obviously, and they know about sex because it's kind of everywhere in front of them. You can't really hide it or sequester it. And I don't think it's healthy to either. I have 6 years between my oldest and my second and my twins. So Jericho was so stable and secure in his knowledge of sex at the time. And then his brothers just kind of followed suit. He sort of taught them as well and followed the lead. And that's kind of how we've done it.
Did you sit Jericho down or did he come to you and say, I need to know about this?
Because of the industry I've worked in my whole life, which is the sexual wellness industry, there's always been things lying around my house. There's always been condoms. There's always been vibrators. There's always been sexual whips and chains. And I know that sounds weird, but there's always been these things around my house. And when he'd go to trade shows with me, and it was just kind of commonplace to understand what that was. And then, you know, it's more moving into the teenager stage. I want to hear what the other moms have to say first about what they're teaching them, because then it's a whole other set. Because just over the past, since he was 16, it's been a whole other conversation, which is completely different than the one I had with him when he was 10. And the ones that I'm having with the twins now. I mean, for example, even Enzo this morning, my youngest twin, said, Mom, what's 69? And I was like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. I look at Luke, I said, it's a number. And Enzo goes, no, it's a sexual position. And I was like, okay, you know what? Let's just put a pin in that and we'll talk about it when I get home tonight. And that's fine. And now it's in my head. I'm like, right, I need to go get a Kama Sutra book. I've got to go get this Chinese position books. Like, you know, and then you show them all, this is 69 and this is pleasure. And then I think, God, they're just 11. but they're in secondary school now, and it's all just there. So much noise that you have to kind of filter through it.
Wow. Okay, there's so much there to come back to.
Yeah.
I'm like dying at the thought of you having to get home tonight and explain what a 69 is. Claire, when did you start having this conversation?
Very similar to Cameron. I mean, my children are 4 and 6. So there has always been an open dialogue. And with children that young, what has been age appropriate is to call their genitals by their anatomical name. And what's interesting when you talk to friends, that's not vagina, it's a vulva that my little 4-year-old can see. So she has a vulva, my son has a penis. And that has been very easy for me to discuss, sort of working in this field. More challenging for my husband. And what's interesting is I know that I'm certainly a minority amongst friends or kind of, you know, babysitters, nannies, that sort of thing. But we know that research has shown that when we use correct anatomical language, the child grows up with a more positive sexual development. Yeah.
Regina, I think it was you on a podcast once that told me off for calling it a front bottom and a back bottom.
Yeah, that's not the way to go, Georgie. So we had a talk at school and the parents, normally it's the kids having the talks, this time it was the parents. And the biggest takeaway for me, this was when they were probably around 5, 6, 7, 8, that sort of age. And they said, you've just got to use the right words. And so we always have. And then 2 days ago, my son, as I said, pushing 13, started talking to me about something, my privates. And I said, you don't have privates. That's someone in the army. You have a penis and you have balls. And that's what we're talking about, isn't it? What are your privates? And then obviously I said, look, they are yours. Of course, they're your private property, but let's not call them privates. It's a penis. Maybe he's just regressed a bit because he's now becoming a bit more self-conscious about these things because he's becoming a teenager. Whereas obviously when he was like 8, he didn't care. But anyway, it was a useful reminder of what you were just saying, Claire, about using the right words. And kind of, I feel like it demystifies the whole subject and that taboo feeling.
Yeah, it takes away the shame. And I think, you know, an important point to consider is that there's anecdotal evidence, again, you know, that kids that use the correct words are less likely to be preyed on by predators.
Yeah. Really?
Because they're not protected by that silence.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that if something happens, it will happen once.
I listened to a podcast with Vanessa Kirby, you know, who was in The Crown and played Princess Margaret, and she talked about sex and growing up in a really open household and how powerful that had been and how, you know, her parents talked openly. I mean, I don't think they announced their own sex lives, but as in they talked about sex in the house and it wasn't this like secret private thing, and it had a massively positive impact on her as a woman. And I just thought it was so interesting. And I guess you guys are all agreeing with that. I think I need to go back to biology and learn what is what, because I'm not calling it a vulva. So
No, me neither.
I think parents' fear around it is that if they talk about it, it will somehow give them permission and they'll be doing it really young. I think that's the fear. But actually, again, evidence shows that they are more likely to practice safe sex.
Exactly. Exactly where I was going to make that point. It's because I am open and honest and speak and talk about masturbation freely, how to use a condom, how to protect yourself, about STIs, how to take care of your sexual health, which is just as important as taking care of your mental health, doesn't mean that I'm saying go out and do it. I'm saying you have now the tools and the education to go out and be the kind of partner that you want to be sexually, and the kind of person, and to make you also feel that you're a respectful, stable, sexual being on the planet. And with those tools, that's my job. That's my job as a mother, to give them all these tools.
We've got to man up and realize it's part of our jobs.
That's it.
Can we talk about what the right age is? Just as a guide, and obviously everyone's different, but is there a guide where you're like, by this age, you really should have like ripped the plaster off?
I mean, I was thinking, just reflecting then, at 4 and 6, my children know that sperm is in my son's testicles and they comes out of his penis. And that's what makes a baby. And my daughter knows that she has ovaries and she has an egg, and you know, how a baby grows. They haven't asked the question yet how it gets there, but when they do, the answer will come. I mean, there's so many resources. WHO has a great pack online about ages. In fact, I think they do 0 to 4, 4 to 6, 6 to 9, 9 to 12. And within that, information that they should know, the skills that they should have and the attitudes. So there's a lot of information. And I think remembering it's about maturity as well as just the age. Some children are more mature than others, so those conversations might happen at different times.
What's your view on giving them books and things to read? I mean, I got sent, I think, to work a book called Why Am I Changing? And I was moving house, and I think it said, you know, this is great for sort of 10-year-olds up. And I think she was 9 or something when I gave it to her, but actually it was brilliant, and it's for parents of boys and girls, and it covers like hormones and mood. And I was like delighted, and I kept getting like pushed on the questions, and I gave her the book, and she was like, oh my god, I know how you made me. But I was delighted not to actually have to sit her down and explain it. What's your advice? Maybe that's totally wrong. What's your advice? Have I totally burnt out?
There's a couple books that I think are nice for your age kids. One's called The Amazing You by Dr. Gail Saltz. Both of these don't really sugarcoat it, because that's what we don't want to do. We don't want to sugarcoat, especially nowadays. They're going to find out anyway with technology. So it's best that we are able to sort of filter that and navigate all of the information out there that they get. So this is a lovely book. And another one, it's called It's Perfectly Normal by Robbie Harris and Michael Emberley. It's an illustrated book. I would say that it's probably for 10 and up. Probably not a teen, like, I don't think my teenagers would really enjoy it. They think it's a bit juvenile. But I think that these are two good resources to not sugarcoat it, to talk about anatomy, talk about the changing body, talk about kissing and how the feelings that you have, sexual feelings that you start to get. So these are two good resources.
Brilliant. I said I would be writing notes. I have genuinely written those two down. Claire, are there any books that you recommend? How do you feel about doing it, you know, in person or via book?
I think it's important that we aren't avoiding our discomfort around it. So maybe it's, you know, if the book feels like a useful resource, but it doesn't just stop there. You know, it's so important that we don't pass our shame and embarrassment onto our kids, you know, and as the adults, it's for us to hold the awkward. So almost my response would be, you know, this isn't feeling comfortable. Let me go and do some work on my stuff so that I can have the conversation.
Yeah, so true. Georgina?
I actually found that the sort of stepping stone of what was happening in school was really useful. So they were having, is it PSHC, I can't remember what the letters are, but for those lessons they have at school where they talk about kind of relationships and sex and puberty, and there's sort of dedicated time in the school day. And if I knew they were having one of those, they would send us ahead of time what they'd be looking at, so we as parents could consent to them attending. And that was really useful as a way of building on what they were already being taught. But I couldn't help but feel that through things like social media, friends who had older siblings, that was a real way that they would be exposed maybe to perhaps a little bit more than I thought at times they were ready for, but maybe I was wrong. And actually, I think all the chats that they have around puberty are great stepping stones naturally to talking about sex and reproduction and how it happens, and forgetting all these terms like special cuddle and all of that stuff, which I really hate actually. Just trying to get to the nub of what you're talking about instead of dressing it up with all these confusing terms. So I think we have at times had conversations where we've been quite open about what actually happens during the act. But I feel that these are conversations that have just sort of happened in the car or taking the dog for a walk, or they've just sort of organically come up in conversation, and then we've sort of moved on. It hasn't been like a big, oh, let's schedule Saturday afternoon to all sit down and have a really big chat. It's not really happened like that. So I think it's been drip fed over time, often led by them.
That normalizes it, and like letting a conversation evolve, because it just happens to happen, as opposed to, as you say, making it so intense and like it's a big thing, you know, it's part of everyday life, and so you're normalizing it. Can we move on to pornography? I mean, you know, is it inevitable that all children are going to watch it these days? I don't know. I'm not at that age, Claire.
Well, I mean, from a study show that by 9, children have seen it intentionally, but it could be as young as 6 or 7.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And the worrying thing is that there was some research done by the NSPCC, and 53% of boys and 39% of girls think that porn's realistic.
I mean, I think my conversation about pornography is this. I mean, look, I love porn. Everybody loves a little bit of porn, right? It is what it is. It's been around forever. I go through their phones every 2 weeks, my kids' phones, because I just do a check randomly to check to see what's going on and what they're watching, what they're not watching. And it's pretty wholesome right now. There's some like TikToks that I'm like, eh. But I think what the main thing that I'm teaching is that there's a difference between reality and performance. To be a sex worker is not a bad thing. And to understand that it is performance, you don't want to get rid of somebody's sexual imagination as well. If somebody has a kink or a fetish, you don't want to put the kibosh on that or weigh it down. I just told my son, I was like, it's not real for a woman to walk in and have 16 men with their dicks out and she services all of them. That's not reality. And if that is your reality, then we need to talk about that because that's performance, it's entertainment. And then we need to kind of discuss that further. It's a very layered conversation. And it's one that's sort of never going to end. But I think the key point is like performance versus reality versus sensuality and respect.
Yeah, and that it doesn't model healthy relationships, you know, and diversity and body image, you know, it's very narrow. And of course, I suppose when you think about the porn industry, it's like the normal movie industry. There's lots of different films of different genres. Some are more closer to life. Potentially, if everything's being processed externally, we lose that mind-body connection internally. You know, we change the circuitry of the brain and potentially material might become kind of compulsive. And I think I read one study that, you know, at first children are quite shocked when they see something, but the more you watch it, the more you desensitize that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But having the conversation, how does it make you feel? Like your friends watching it, how does it make you feel? What do you think the people in the movie are feeling? So just getting them to question or to be curious about what's actually going on there.
God, that's age 9, 6 and 7 stat. God. Georgina, you discussed pornography with your children.
There was something in the newspaper one Saturday, I think it was in the Times too, and it talked about, I think Claire just mentioned about this NSPCC report with the ages that children have watched pornography. And I read it and I was really, really shocked and said to my husband, 9, 10, I mean, we've got I think this was actually in the middle of lockdown as well. So, you know, everyone was on their phones more than ever. In their bedrooms, isolated from people. And I did kind of think, oh, this is a really nice kind of perfect opportunity for them to be watching God knows what upstairs. Although actually we've got so many kind of parental controls on things that, to be honest, I think they would find it quite hard to break through and find. But I don't know with TikTok and other things how that works. But anyway, so we actually did open up the conversation but we came at it from the angle of this isn't real. This is not lovemaking. These are two people who are being paid to act out a scene of having sex. And sometimes that could be a situation where a woman is being really objectified and taken advantage of, and she is not getting pleasure. And there's obviously this whole side then when you get into the consent argument and the way that people in that industry are treated. And we talked about it, but it was kind of from that angle, I suppose, as opposed to using porn for your own pleasure.
And you also de-glamorize it, don't you? So I think like it sounds like the way you did it kind of took any veneer off it. And
yeah, I think so. We're like, there's probably 10 people in the room, you know, they're really cold, someone's waiting with a dressing gown, you know, it's really not all sexy at all. But then, you know, I also know that lots of people enjoy porn, and I don't want to then say, therefore it's really bad and you shouldn't watch it, because, you know, who knows? I don't want to give them shame around it either. So I think it can feel quite tricky. In the moment when you're stuck in that conversation, you're thinking, I'm treading water now, I'm not really sure where I'm going. But yeah, I don't know, I feel at least now we've had some sort of conversation that we can go back to.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's also important that we can name that to our kids. This is a really tricky conversation. This is really uncomfortable. I'm doing something that our family have never done before. You know, this is new stuff. And even when we understand, you know, for me, even though I understand from a professional point of view, that doesn't mean that it's not awkward. And I think naming that and, you know, let's explore this together, this difficult subject.
I think like showing a bit of vulnerability as a parent is not a disaster.
No, not at all.
Actually, I have a question. You know that show, I mean, it's almost pornographic, but it's not, Sex Education.
Yeah.
So my daughter approached it, she's 15 and a half, and she said to me, oh, lots of my friends have watched it, I haven't watched it. And it's clearly an 18 rating. And I watched the first season. And I said, well, okay, maybe we can watch it together. And then if you've got any questions or if that's too embarrassing, you can watch it. And then I can talk to you about it afterwards. I mean, is that the right way to go with a show like that? I assume you guys have seen it.
I think it's a brilliant show.
It is a brilliant show.
It is a brilliant show.
It's a great way, I think, of getting into those conversations.
It does. Jericho's already seen it. He's like, it's great. It's great. I think 15. Yeah, it's okay. The perfect time.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd rather that than porn.
Well, I was just thinking when I was 15, I mean, I was already masturbating. I bought my first vibrator when I was 16. I think also that goes back to culture. I grew up in Northern California. I didn't grow up in England, and very sort of open like this. And it's, sex is also so cultural, and you've got to teach your children these things as well. A lot of my kids' friends are Somalis, Nigerians, Jamaicans. My kids are biracial, so they date everybody under the sun. Jericho's last girlfriend was a beautiful Nigerian girl, strict Christian family, and having to talk to him about that and how to do that, kind of going off subject. But I think that 15, 16, if you don't know about sex by then, or I think that you're going to have a hard time. They need to know, or it's doing them a disservice. Again, completely my opinion.
Knowledge is power. Where do you all stand on your own sexual activity and how much you share or don't with your children? Because it's one thing, you know, having the station of this is how it works. This is pleasure. This is making babies. This is whatever. How much do you talk about yourself? Caroline, I'm going to start with you.
There's been a few times that they've walked in on us. And to me, it was just really, okay. And they just kind of know. And then they walk away. There's one time when my son walked in on me when I was using a toy on my own in the bathtub. He just looked and then kind of just walked away. And I was thinking, right, this is my time. I didn't lock the door. That was just my fault. This was my time for self-love and to explain. He didn't ask, but I also just felt that I did feel not shame at all, but I did feel awkward. And I just had to explain again. Then that's what led us into this masturbation conversation about how important it is to have that positive interaction with yourself, by yourself, however you'd like to do it. For relaxation, for blood circulation. Of course, I mentioned all the health aspects of it. And I think they started to understand that. What I don't think that they understand is it's different because I don't have a penis. They're like, how does that work? I think for them, they just see me as somebody that has a period because they see me bleed every month and had babies. I don't think they see the vulva, the vagina, or anything, the clitoris, as something that's pleasurable. That's something that where it's not like their penis where they can touch.
You're saying you do share, you are open about your own activity.
Yeah, very, very. And my situation is different because their dad and I live together and we parent together, but we're not together. So I'm in a completely different situation. It's very interesting.
Claire, how do you feel? Is your own sex life something you share with them or you don't?
I'm not there yet. I'm not yet, but I was thinking in terms of, so my daughter was born at home, just next to where our bed is. So we talk about that. You know, for me, what's important is about being a myth breaker rather than maker. So when the conversations come up, it will be an avenue, a little bit like Georgie said, you know, you take these opportunities when they arise, and that's your opportunity for discussion. So it hasn't come up yet, but I imagine that there will be open dialogue if and when it does, if that makes sense.
Georgina, I'm not going to put you on the spot. You're not an ambassador for Lalo or a relationship expert, but do you feel like some things are private?
Yeah, 100%. I'm sorry, I do. I mean, you can stick me back into the 1950s if you want, but I just feel like I'm happy to talk to them about sex, masturbation, consent, anything. but my son has asked me if I'm having sex with his father and how often. And I said, that is my private life, because I will talk to you about sex. I'll talk to you about anything. But I do feel that there is a part of me that's a mother. There's a part of me that's a career woman. And there is a part of me that is a wife. And I don't feel that everybody is entitled to every part of me. And I don't believe my children's understanding of sex and relationships is necessarily enhanced by knowing how many times a week I am having sex.
Yeah.
So for me, I just feel like everyone's different, but that's just how I feel. And I had the direct question and I gave my very direct answer, said, my sex life, it's not yours to know about, but I'm happy to talk to you about sex.
Yeah, I think that's so important, honouring that privacy as well.
And frankly, you know, perhaps not to the women, and it shouldn't be something you're ashamed of, but it is intimate, and it is something between two people. It doesn't need to be between a whole family. Everyone's different. So, you know, I think I'm so pro the conversation, and God, I'm learning so much from you all. But yeah, I'm with you. Let's move on to masturbation. God, that's not a conversation that I'm particularly looking forward to having, even less so than the birds and the bees, which sounds so dated to say that out loud. Cameron?
I think masturbation came really quite easy, because I think, first of all, we talked about, this was Jericho, and I would say he was about almost 13 when I started talking to him about, because you know, he was in the toilet a long time, you know, and he had his phone with him and he was in the toilet and he wasn't going to the bathroom, and he'd come out and his cheeks would be a little bit flushed, you know, and I was like, all right, the tissues, like the sticky tissues were in the garbage can. I was like, okie dokie. So I sat him down and I just straight up said, are you beginning to masturbate? Because at that point, like Georgina said, he already took the personal development classes, all of these things. So he was starting to understand it. Plus with, you know, me constantly talking about it, that it's okay, and starting to just become explorative, which is great. But I said, look, there's things that you need to know about it, that it is your time. Yeah. You don't do this in front of anybody except for partner, of course, later on. That's another conversation. So this is your time, but always just make sure you're hygienic. You make sure that you have clean hands, make sure that you, if something were to happen, make sure that your sheets are washed and go for it. I'm not going to delve into like, what are you thinking about? What, like, it's not, that's like not my business, but it was just more about the hygiene part, and that it stays with you and that is your thing. And you don't need to share it with your brothers. You don't need to share it with your friends unless you want to. And then that was it. And I think then he just kind of took it from there.
Okay, Claire, what you add to that? I mean, 4 and 6.
I think, you know, just normalizing that this is a place that can feel really sensitive, it can feel really exciting, it's a beautiful thing, and it's something you do in private. So sort of the private versus public space, I think, is important, just that they can understand, you know, go to your bedroom, enjoy, shut the door, just so that we all know, especially if children were to share a bedroom, tell each other that we need some private space. Yeah. And that might be something you do at that time. Or you might be playing Lego. Yeah. I don't know. You know, it's just about that public versus private.
Georgina, masturbation, is that a conversation you found easy to have? Is it one you've had?
I wouldn't say it's one that particularly has been had in a very specific way. I gave my daughter a book by Bryony Gordon, and there is a chapter in it about masturbation and how she was in the swimming pool when she was about 12 or 13 and she kind of felt the jet of water that when she was on the side, and it kind of was propelled towards her, and she suddenly felt it sort of stimulated by this. And that was her first experience. So she then talks about, you know, the positive side of masturbation and how it's not something to be ashamed of. And I kind of, a bit like you, Georgie, sort of went, oh, look, this book's got a really interesting chapter here. And I kind of left that with her. And she kind of said to me, oh, I'm not sure. This was a few years ago. She's like, I'm not sure I want to read that chapter yet. And I went, okay, fine. Well, it's there when you do. I suppose I did slightly chicken out. I think it's more, it's a really interesting contrasting conversation with my son, because although he's approaching 13, some of his friends have already turned 13. And there seems to be a sort of jokey banterness about amongst boys that age about erections, having the sock by the bed, these sort of terms he'll kind of throw out there to almost gauge what my reaction will be, to wonder if, how far he's able to go in the conversation. That's the sort of feeling I'm having at the moment, but he hasn't actually asked me directly any specific questions about it.
Can we talk about consent? I mean, it's such an important thing. How do we empower our daughters, educate our sons? I mean, how do you approach it with your sons, Cameron? It's a good place to start.
I think because of the whole Me Too movement, and women are very empowered these days, and there's so many rules that boys and men have to face, like if they can't even touch you without, you know, you don't know what's going to be at somebody's trigger, and you want to be respectful within that. But then there's also an art of, you know, banter and flirting and these kind of things that get lost in that. So I talk to them all the time. Jericho's definitely straight. So we talk. I always say to him, how you treat me is how you should treat your girlfriend or your partner. And he is absolutely lovely, just respectful and kind and giving and very sexually. He talked to me about his first experience. And I said, you don't have to go into too much detail, but he was just like, it was really, really lovely. I was like, you know what? That's good. This is really good. I said, is she happy? And when he broke up with her, I said, he did it in a way I didn't like very much. And I did sit him down. I said, is she okay? I mean, you're her first. So please, you need to understand, like, this is a big deal. This is going to stay with her for her whole life. So you can't just be like, talk to you Thursday. It's not like that. And I wouldn't have known about it. She just said, you know, Jericho's not making me feel comfortable. And I read it. And I was like, all right, darling, like, I've got you covered. I'm like, Jericho, get down here. Sat down. I was like, this is not right. So I think they get it. I mean, they absolutely get it. And if they even talk out of place with me, even just a little bit, I know this is really not really consent, but it's how to speak to people as well. I just say, no. Say it in another way. Talk to me like this. Mm-hmm. And how you talk to your teachers, and that's how you speak to me, and how you speak to the girls on the street and everything. So you just got to teach them young. I think because their father is a really respectful man and also teaches about women and consent and all of these things. I think they've got it from both ends. He is very respectful to me, toward me, and respectful towards his mother, his sister, the general public. So they just, I think, I mean, we just lead by example, really, is what it is.
I think that role model from a father and how, respect has a huge part to play. Claire, what would you add to what Cameron said around consent? And it's about respect, really, isn't it?
I was listening to a podcast with a girl called Cassie Blake, and she was talking about her MSc research, and she talked to a load of students about their sex education. She brought the topic of consent, and they said, yeah, we learned about rape. And I think that's really interesting that we think of consent at that end, whereas, you know, what I'm teaching consent now with a 4 and 6-year-old in terms of, you know, is your fun for everyone? Do they like that touch? You know, what's happening kind of in that moment? Is that something that feels good? And I think, again, at this age, or I remember from my experience, kind of give Auntie so-and-so a hug, but actually you don't want to. And being taught, yes, oh, you'll hurt their feelings, just give them a hug. You know, that mixed message of I'm going to put myself down or bracket myself and just do what I'm told. So consent is so much more, you know, than getting to that stage of rape. And of course, it can change. You know, we can consent to one thing in that moment, but it evolves, it changes. No, I don't like that. So I think modeling to our children outside the bedroom. So, for example, when we don't want to go to a party, we say no. We don't just force ourselves to do the things that we don't want to do because they're watching and learning. You know, mummy does all of these things for other people. So really modeling that from a young age so that they can say no.
That's such a good point, Claire, that, give them a hug, like at Christmas time, Thanksgiving, and they're just like, ugh. And I remember that feeling also. I just didn't want to give my uncle a hug. I didn't want to sit next to him. Nothing happened. I just didn't want to. But you're right. It's, and you forget about that feeling, don't you?
Georgina, consent, is that something you've chatted about?
Yeah, actually, just before, I've got my daughter's off sick at the moment, so I just popped up to her bedroom to ask her if she had any thoughts on this topic. And she said, actually, I follow a really good person on Instagram called Teach Us Consent. And it's a young woman, I think she's Australian, and she goes around schools in the UK at the moment. And it's just talking to boys and girls about consent and about what the lines are. And obviously different people have different boundaries. And I think even just recognizing that, that what one person's okay with is not what someone else is okay with. So that was her little input. But also I've tried to say things to my son, if he's kind of, you know how siblings are physical sometimes, and you know, just like, oh, your sister's told you to stop it now, you need to listen to that, she said stop. And I'm not trying to get all heavy, like, she said stop, so if you're ever with a girl and they say stop, you know, like, I'm just trying to gently, she said stop, so you need to back off straight away. I remember the first time both of them went on a overnight school trip, I kind of said, you know, you're away from mummy and daddy, and you're going to be with some people we don't know, and just remember that it's your body, and if it's your, you know, and I felt a bit awkward, but it was just kind of trying to say something like, just if you ever feel that someone is touching you in a way you don't like, that is not okay, and you need to go and tell your teacher. And nothing did happen, but it was more just that first time that they were going to be without me with other adults that perhaps I hadn't met. And it kind of occurred to me as they got out of the car and I sort of blurted this thing out, which was probably really stupid. But I wish I'd had that, maybe tried to have that conversation with them sooner in a more appropriate way.
I like the way you did it, Georgina. Well done, mama. Good job. Oh,
thank you. Felt a bit clumsy, but thank you.
Georgina, you're full of wise words. In fact, you all are, ladies. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have honestly sat here and written notes. There's Instagram accounts to follow, books to buy, and yeah, it's empowering. Rip the plaster off, have the conversations. Yeah. Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Cameron. Thank you, Georgina. That's it for this week. If you enjoyed that, then do please tell your friends to listen to, rate, review, subscribe, and we'll be back soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.